That's a big game changer because a lot of people get silk screen or specially
Yeah,
printed.
that's like 5 minutes. Don't oh,
Dude.
actually 5 hours. It took me 5 hours
I was gonna
to
say, you did that in 5 minutes? You belong in the museum
hours. It
too.
took me forever. I worked so hard to do that.
Welcome back to another episode of the Making Magic podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host, and I'm a professional magician, speaker, and 3D designer. And this is all about inspiring conversations with the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers, the wizards behind the curtain that make the magic for you. Now, if it's your first time joining us, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to watch this stuff. I really do appreciate that. And if you're enjoying everything so far, feel free to click the red subscribe button and the notification bell to stay up to date when I release my next episode. Perhaps you're just listening to the sound of my voice on one of the many popular podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. I'm there. We're all there on all the shows. Any popular podcast platform, you will find me. Hopefully, you'll enjoy this show enough to leave a healthy 5-star review because it's enriching your day and making it a little bit more exciting and educational. So that's my goal here. And with all of that being said, let's learn a little bit more about our next guest. She's been performing and creating magic for over 35 years, and during that time, she has built a reputation within the magic and theatrical communities as one of the most creative, innovative, and respected minds in the art. Her creative solutions have been sought out by many of the greatest names in magic, from Penn and Teller to Matt Franco and even David Copperfield. Magicians from around the world have solicited her help in finding the solutions to their magic roadblocks. And she's created effects for countless Las Vegas stage productions, film, universities, and even numerous television shows. And her creations are often seen, but even more often, they are the invisible secrets that make the magic work. The female fabric manipulator. Please welcome my next guest, Lynetta Welch. Check it out. Hey, Lynetta, thanks so much for joining me on Making Magic.
Hey, Sean, it's great to be here.
Yes, I'm happy to have you too, especially just to put this out there. There's creative women, and you are one of the most creative out there in the business, and your specialty, which you'll be talking about later in this interview, is very interesting, what you do with your work. So I like to start off this show with a story, and I'd like to have you as my guest share with me a story of the very first thing that you ever made or invented or created. And this could be something good, it could be something bad, and funny stories are always welcome too. So
let's see. Wow. You're making me go back a long way.
Yes.
I'd say it was probably, I mean, I started when I was just a kid, but I wasn't making stuff then. Like everybody, I had my Marshall Brodine kits and all that stuff. But when I really started making everything and had moved to Los Angeles, I lived in an apartment and built a sub trunk, a metamorphosis trunk in my apartment.
Wow, that's dedication right there.
I would say that's probably one of the first things I really built. And yeah, in my apartment, my neighbors hated me.
Because of the bang, bang, bang of the nails,
yeah,
right?
There was this one girl, and I think she was on drugs, so noises really bothered her.
Oh no.
It was Los Angeles, you know?
Right.
Noises bothered her, and oh, she hated me with everything inside of her. I remember one time that because I used, you know, jigsaws and everything in the apartment and hammered and drilled and all this stuff.
Wow.
But one time I was using an electric can opener, and I think she thought I was building again. And she threw her pot through her window. because she was so mad at me. And I was like, it was an electric can opener. It wasn't even a jigsaw this time.
Wait a minute. You said she threw her, because first you said she was a drug addict. Then you said, I thought you said she threw her pot.
No, not her pot. Not that kind of pot.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Her cooking utensils.
Got it. Cause yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I can see how that would be confusing.
Yes,
yeah.
It would be. I'm just trying to get context
heavier
here.
Drugs than pot.
Got it. I'm just trying to get context just for the viewers and the listeners. That's all.
If it had been pot, I think she would have been a little more mellow and it wouldn't have bothered her so much.
She probably would have jumped out the window with it if that went flying.
Yeah.
So she threw cooking ware out the window.
Maybe I should have said pan.
That's fine.
Threw a pan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that was like her revenge.
Yeah. It didn't do anything for me. It didn't break my window. It broke hers. But
oh. Meaning she threw it at the window and then it broke.
Oh
the window
yeah.
And flew. Oh yeah. My goodness! Wow.
Yeah, and I'm like, it was a can opener. I can cook, right? Yeah.
No.
Yeah. She thought it was, one of my power tools.
She doesn't cook, probably.
Yeah, probably.
So she didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. I don't know. Stuff
I can
your...
begin to see why people get confused when I have conversations with them. I'm talking about things completely different than what they think I'm talking about.
Yeah. I mean, especially when those things have the same names as other things.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I mean, that's why.
You go to the hardware store and they'll ask you, you know, well, what do you need that for? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Just.
Yeah. And then when you try, because you're a magician, you're trying to keep it a secret or you don't want to go into it. Then they go, oh, really? That's what she's into.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Trying to keep it all private.
Me, bullet catch. I just need a bullet catch. Trust me. Yeah.
Right. Wow. Okay. Well, this went from 0 to 100 real fast. That was interesting. No, this is great. This is unexpected. This is what making magic's all about. You are getting the real deal, unedited, straight from Lynetta. We're going back in time here. LA, of course. LA, anything goes. Everything is unexpected.
Yeah.
Expect the unexpected. How big was that subtrunk? And by subtrunk, we're talking about the wooden box that's about... How big was it?
Probably, let's see, at least 3 feet wide by probably 30 inches by about 3 feet tall.
Oh, that's a smallish one.
It wasn't real big, and that's what, and it wasn't real big. I don't want to say too much about it, but it was actually a really good design.
okay.
Yeah.
So
impossible.
Just again, because people are also listening just to the audio version on this podcast, we're referring to a basically the prop simply looks like a wooden box, but this wooden box creates the effect of causing a magician and his or her assistant to trade places. When one stands on top of the box, they pull up a cloth and boom, they have switched. The other is inside the box.
And this one looked just like, it just looked like a wooden packing crate.
Cool.
I would carry props in it. I would carry my props in it because it worked really well for that. But then it also was used to do the illusion. So.
Wow. So it was double duty. It carried, actually carried your props like a box should.
Yeah.
And then you empty it out and you use that too. I think that actually makes a lot more sense than just a magician bringing out the box, the prop thing.
Yeah.
Designed just to do that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, this was a crate.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. And what was the reason why you made that box? Was it just simply for your show?
Yeah.
It was just... You had a series of effects in your show, and you said to yourself, I want to do a larger style illusion, so let me build one, right?
You know what? It was really popular during that time. You know, Pendragons especially had made it really
popular. I was going to mention that. We're talking...
And so it was 80s? During that you know, time frame where we all wanted to be like them anyway.
Right. Right.
And... It was used a lot for what I always called commando shows. They were those kind of shows that you don't necessarily, well, these days it would be Facebook. It didn't exist then, but you wouldn't tell everybody you did the shows, but it paid your rent. You know?
Yeah.
It fit in the trunk of your car and you could go that's what this was. It could break down or it could hold the props, especially backstage. It would keep everything secure if you're working a banquet or things like that. And then, it's really very practical. And I think a metamorphosis trunk and an egg bag are two of the most practical tricks in magic.
Egg bag for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's like,
they can barely be anything anywhere. And they can fit in a show at any point, beginning, middle, or end.
That's true.
I mean, an egg bag can be performed close-up parlor stage.
That's also true. I didn't think about it like that.
On the apron, it can be performed even out in the audience. It can, it can be performed when something goes awry backstage, and they're going, kill some time. You've got it right there. It can fly with you in your pocket on an airplane, in case your luggage gets lost.
Yes.
It's just, to me, it's one of the most, I always tell people, even if you're not putting it in your show permanently, you actually should learn it, because it's a trick you can do anywhere.
Yeah, 360 degrees. I mean, literally, people can be actually underneath you looking up.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Because it's just a cloth. It's a cloth bag, and you put something inside of it, and you take something out, and that's it. That's what. Simple.
Yeah, it's very simple. It's easy to follow, and like I said, you can perform it at spur of the moment.
Hobson. Look at what Hobson's done with it. Yeah. He just takes down the house with it.
Yeah, Johnny was unbelievable.
Johnny Thompson,
yeah. That's the bag I make, because Johnny Thompson's, he gave that to me.
Yes.
So, just a lot of people did great. I mean, John Carney does.
Carney, yeah.
A lot of the really, strong magicians.
Reed McClintock, actually,
has
a very, very logical, really nice take on it. I'm not going to reveal or give much any more info about it outside of, I believe it was published in, I think it was Genie. I know he was on the cover, and I think it was a Genie. This was quite a few years ago, but I remember it very well because it was one of the most unique Genie columns I've seen in a while, because Reed is very original with his thinking, and speaking of which, he needs to be a guest as well, because he's really far out there with his magic thinking.
I do it. I act like it's like the lining of my purse. And I've lost my keys. I can't find the keys. I'm digging through my purse. Finally, I rip the lining out of my purse. And that's what I, because I make a whole joke about women always lose everything in their purses.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And then the funny thing is, and then I end up, I don't find the keys, but I pull out an egg. And it's so silly and so ridiculous. And then I'm watching the news one day, and this had to have been like 2 months after Easter. And they're doing like this banter back and forth, and the one woman's digging through her purse, and she pulls out an egg.
That's great.
From her purse. And I went, you have got to be kidding me.
That's so perfect.
I was like, I thought it was so ridiculous. I mean, a joke's done. Who has an egg? Who carries an egg in their purse? Apparently, the local newscaster here does.
Apparently, and it makes for a great, I wish you could find that segment and cut it together.
I know.
That would be a great.
She just pulled an egg out of her purse.
She just
pulled an egg out of their purse.
She created a new standard.
Yeah.
That needs to go in your lecture.
I sat there laughing by myself, thinking that it was so funny because here I'd been pulling an egg out of my purse, and I'm like, it's so silly, so ridiculous. Nobody would have an egg in their purse.
Well, it's funny because maybe, you know, maybe that's what audiences think of the egg bag effect in general. Yeah. Maybe that's why it's so memorable, because they just go, wow, that's really random. It's
yeah. Like,
because,
you know, I heard a story, and I don't know if it's true. I said recently to somebody, I've got to research this and find out if it's true. I had heard that one thought behind it when the egg bag became so popular was that eggs were things that like construction workers and factory workers, they would carry for their lunch.
Okay,
and
yeah.
Carry them in a bag, just like a cloth bag. And that's what they would have for lunch, because it was something that they could, it could be cooked, and it, because a shell is a container,
right?
And it won't spoil before lunch. And so, if you know, there, I don't know if it's true or not. It makes a good story, though.
It does. That's, I've never heard that one, and to me, it doesn't make sense for a construction worker to be carrying a cloth bag. But hey, I'm not a construction.
No, we're talking like back in the 30s.
Okay, well, maybe back in the 30s, that was the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, now we have, you know, better things to carry our lunches in. But I mean, you know, think back in the, you know, during the Depression, when, you know, you carry and make a bag, the wife would make a bag, and the husband would carry eggs for his lunch in it. I don't know. It makes sense.
Yeah, take an old shirt or something that's ripped, and just cut a piece off of it and make it turn into a satchel.
Sacks, you know, they used flour sacks to make a lot of things then.
Flour sack. That's a good. Yeah,
no, the flour companies, because people didn't have any money, they found out mothers were making clothes for their kids out of flour sacks. So the flour companies started packing flour in decorative fabric with little cute patterns and everything on it.
So because they knew.
Then when the moms made the clothes for the kids, they were cute clothes. They didn't look like flour sacks.
That's because they knew where it was going after the flour was gone.
Yeah.
That was going to be the next use for it, which I think is great. Very resourceful.
Yeah.
Resourceful. Cool. Let's go back to the box, because I still had one more question about that box, that first thing, but then we can go more into this egg bag and what you specialize in. What specifically did you learn from making this box, this trunk for your show?
Well, I did a lot of woodworking.
Okay.
I built the first twister illusion, which is something a lot of people don't know. A lot of people do, a lot of people don't.
And the twister illusion is, can you just quickly explain?
It's a person gets into a box, and there's a piece that goes over their head, like a box over their head. Mm-hmm. And then their body's in a box, and the legs stick out the bottom.
Okay.
And then the head is twisted around and around and around, and you open up the box and the body's all twisted up.
Ah, kind of like you wring out a mop kind of look.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Think about wringing out a towel or, you know, a dishcloth or something, all wrung out like that. And then you unspin the head and open it up, and the body is then not twisted anymore.
Back to normal again, wow.
Yeah. And Lou Lancaster came up with the idea, and a lot of people have claimed that they came up with the idea, but it was Lou Lancaster, who was really more of a close-up guy, but he came up with the idea, and he told people, and a lot of the people he told decided they came up with the idea, but it's like, it was Lou.
There's always that independently created debate.
Yeah.
It will go on forever and ever, as long as there are people creating and then making and building things.
Yeah.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
I'm going to put some pictures up just so the viewers can see, but hopefully we gave it a good enough description. I will splice in some photos.
I'm going to grab a picture right quick and I'll show you.
Oh, okay. Well, you actually have the real deal.
Yeah.
Lynetta has a official... Okay.
This right here, magicians enjoy this. Bill Smith actually wanted to make, he had to make a copy of it. You can see my ring light there.
Bring it a little bit closer if you can. And then
you'll
just
get my ring light showing.
That's okay.
But this is.
That's okay.
That, the first twister before any paint or anything was on it, that's my head and
That's you.
in a head box. That's my first drawing of one. This is, okay, that right there is, you remember, I built a trick where spikes, get in a box and the spikes come down and you open it up and the girl's gone.
Yes.
And spikes, okay. That was put in one of those boxes to see what, if the idea would work. And I don't want to say anything because I, you know, it'll give away.
Right. Yeah, no, we're not revealing methods. But what do you mean by you put the spiker box inside of another box?
I didn't put the spiker. I took...
Sorry, I misunderstood.
I took a shirt and twisted it.
Okay.
And put it in the box.
Oh, just to get the look to see what it would...
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's what that was, to see if the method would work.
Gotcha. Just if everything would look right and gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Basically, if the method really would work.
Interesting. Just kind of juxtaposing things, just to say, hey, I've got this box sitting around. Hey, if it looked like this, would this?
Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
And that's what that is. But yeah, that's my whole process. And that's even the Formica chip that I put on the first one.
That's awesome. And you've got that documented. Yeah. That's a big deal. That's a big deal because that's a classic illusion. I've seen many stage illusionists perform this body twister thing.
Yeah. But that's the whole process of building the first one.
Got so excited. Yeah.
I have measurements drawn and everything on it to go. Oh,
no, that's cool. That's cool. So you learned a lot from the original box that you first made. I mean, you learned about measuring twice before you cut once.
Yeah. Well, I learned that when I was in school and took shop class. So
good.
I was the person who took shop class and home ec because I wanted to sew and I wanted to build.
So. Okay. So you were well-rounded.
Yeah.
In multiple disciplines, which is nice, and which informed your later work. So,
like I learned in shop class, I learned to work with leather, which now, you know, is something that I need to know that with what I do now for some things.
Okay.
I've made straight jackets, and you have to know how to work with leather if you're gonna.
Okay. We'll go into that a little more later. Well, knowing what you know now, though, Lynetta, because you've had quite the illustrious career and quite the versatile career, playing both the part of the performer, the assistant, and the maker, and doing them all at once, and now you're back to the maker, just making. Knowing what you know now, after all of these experiences, what would you wish you would have told your younger self to prevent making the mistakes that you made early on?
I would tell myself the same thing I tell a lot of young people, is get a business degree. That's my number one thing I would tell people, is no matter what you're doing, and it's a mistake I made, and so I gotta learn from my mistake. It'll be a lot easier if you get a business degree. You'll be able to run your business, whether you're a performer or, you know, I'm not telling you get it so you have something to fall back on. I'm saying get it so you can run your business the right way,
to use it as a tool. Yes. Yeah, I mean,
and your parents will be happy because you'll have a degree.
Parents will be happy. Yes, I when I was starting, I was all about magic, and people always told me, they tried to instill the importance of meta skills upon me, whether it be getting a degree. Some people can go through life just fine without any degrees. They got the hustle and the motivation. Some people need a little bit of guidance, and certainly it's always good to have business knowledge, however you get it. Getting a business degree is a great way. Some people learn as they go, which
is more of what I did.
And that's okay. You just have to learn real fast because each mistake you make, I always
pay for it.
I rationalize for it. You go, man, I lost $500. Well, that's $500 towards my tuition, towards my
street
degree.
Yeah, I paid that much for that lesson.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But I agree with you totally. I mean, that's why they call it show business. There's the show, and then there's the business.
I'm not saying, you know, some kids have, you know, they've come up to me and talked to me. And my parents say I need something to fall back on. I go, then get a business degree. Because then you can do your magic business. You know, you both win that way.
Right. Parents are happy.
You're not falling back on it, but they think you are. So
it's the illusion of the business degree. No, it's you're right. Like just any meta skill that's outside of magic is always useful because you can. If magic always will remain your passion or whatever the heck a person's passion is, they can always draw from other meta skills to make their job more interesting. Yeah. They can be more useful. They could be more productive in the case of a business degree or just business knowledge if they go to tech courses or whatever.
Everything I said, I don't know why I need to learn this. I'm going to be an entertainer. I use math. I use all these, everything I learned in English. I used science. There were times I was mixing chemicals to make explosives and stuff for shows. And it's like, wow, I can't believe I'm going to be an entertainer.
Nobody's going to tell me nothing.
Yeah. And I've used every bit of it.
You're right. You're right. It's like the longer we live, the more we realize what tools we need, and some of the things that we skipped over, we kind of kick ourselves and we go, man, I wish I could have spent a little more time on that. I know English for sure. I think, you know, my dad always would tell me, he would always harp on me on that. He'd say, Sean, he said, you really want to nail that English class or just class, degree, whatever, because you'd be surprised how many facets of your life, good English, good written and oral communication can get you places that you'd never. And he's so right, because we write emails all the time. If we write emails with a bunch of misspellings and poor grammar, we could be the best whatever in the world at our trade. But if we write a crappy email to somebody, that's our first impression. If they've never seen us in person, they don't know who we are. We could be a great person. We could be a lovely. But man, that email, that phone call,
or even Facebook posts. There are sometimes I'll see things and I'll be like, I didn't know they were an idiot. That's terrible. I know I shouldn't think that, but it's important.
It's revealing. Whenever anybody has to communicate, it reveals a lot about a person because it just tells you what their priorities are and what their preferred style of communication is. Some people have more aggressive styles than others.
I want to preface this with, don't read my Facebook posts and then judge my grandma.
So after this airs, Lynetta's going to go on a sabbatical of social media so nobody can see the stuff.
I'm just being a conversationalist on there. I'm not trying to be perfect.
That's right. We're specifically, I was thinking like, whatever trade we are in, if we are getting work and we are communicating with potential clients and already existing clients, I think it's important in all facets of life, but that's where it's the most important, especially for our business.
It really is.
English.
Yeah, it's really important.
Speaking and writing well. Scripting.
Yes.
Delivering the goods on stage, the patter, as it were. And
that's what that is. It's creative writing.
Creative writing. Yep, from the page to the stage. Okay. Yeah. What about, let's switch gears a little bit, and can you tell us about, and maybe you even have it in the room that you're in, something that you have recently made? And you can now tell
Well, I mean, I have my product line. So probably what I'm most known for are egg bags. Let's do a red one so you can see it.
Hey, there we go. There we go.
That because I don't know if you know the story of mine. When I first started my
No, I don't
business,
believe so.
oh, mine's Joni Thompson's egg bag. Because when I first started my business with Hayden Pop, Hayden called me and said, Johnny Thompson's looking for someone to make his egg bags. I think it would be really good for you. And I said, please have him call me. And so Johnny called me, and what Johnny gave me was Charlie Miller's egg bag.
Charlie Miller's a great from the, what was his era, the 50s, 40s?
50s, 60s.
50s, 60s, okay,
Yeah.
50s, close.
I mean, the history basically of my egg bag was Mellini came up with this design,
Max Mellini, yes.
and he then it went to Charlie Miller,
Okay.
and he and Charlie Miller worked on it, and then Charlie Miller gave it to Johnny Thompson, and Charlie and Johnny came up with the exact design that I make,
I
and
see.
then Johnny gave it to me.
So Johnny gave you the pattern.
Johnny gave me the rights.
The rights to
There
reproduce the
was no
pattern.
pattern. He handed me Charlie Miller's egg bag and said, can you duplicate? So for days I sat like this. Because you can't take a stitch ripper to Charlie Miller's egg bag. I couldn't rip it apart and figure out
Well,
how to.
because it's an antique, it's a
Yeah.
treasure.
Yeah, it's
You
a treasure.
don't want to rip
I
that
couldn't rip
thing.
it apart. I had to just sit. And I made at least 20 of them wrong
You
before I
hear
got.
that, folks? Now we've spoke, you know, when I interviewed Franz Ferrari, we talked about maybe six or seven prototypes. I interviewed a few other people. The average six, seven, eight.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do 10, 20. It
I
took
made
Lynetta
20
20
egg bags.
prototypes
Yeah.
before she got
20.
down to the what you see today. And plus, you were dealing at us with a slight disadvantage because you couldn't quite dismantle
Yeah,
a
I couldn't.
very valuable antique, basically.
Right. And the secrets to how they're made, it's all hidden inside.
Right.
And they're not as easy to make as people think they are to make them right.
I bet
Because
fabric is.
they really are like the same on the inside as they are on the outside, and
That looks
all of that.
fantastic. That's what it's
So
supposed to look like.
yeah. So to do that, they have to be made a specific way.
So yours, AKA the improved Charlie Miller Mellini, you just turned it totally inside out, and you can show it with your hand in there, just like this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah.
That looks great.
Well, because there's nothing there.
It looks well. That is. That's the goal. That's the goal when making them. It looks great.
Yeah.
So that's.
The things Johnny added, I guess I can't talk about part of
Yeah,
it,
not, we won't go too much
but
into the
like the
method.
rounded corners and stuff. So when you turn it inside out, the corners, they're it's easy to pop your corners so you're not sitting there with it,
That's actually, yeah, because I have a, let's just say, an inferior one that I got when I was, I don't know, a teenager, and it's very
Yeah.
thick, and the corners are sharp, and I was always trying to do
Yeah.
like this
Yeah.
to make the corners, and that was always a thing, wasting time, you know, trying to flatten the whole thing out and.
And the other thing, without giving anything away, is the egg will always fall where you want it to be.
Nice.
Does that make sense?
It makes total sense to me
Okay.
and the magicians that are watching it
Yeah.
will be, yes.
Kind of being Penn and Teller here and talking in a little bit of code.
Well, I'm used to talking in code, and some of my guests, they get too carried away and I have to stop them, but no, this is good. This is good. And no, this is great. So but the bottom line is you've taken a classic that's been handed down from one great magician to the next,
Yeah.
and And then you just had the pleasure, the luck of getting Johnny Thompson, the godfather of magic, who I'll put a picture up for everybody to see.
Yeah.
And
Yeah.
he just
Oh,
seems so famous.
that right there. You see that?
Ah,
That big
that's his coat.
at this coat.
That's the coat you were telling me about. Oh, check this. For the listeners, she has Johnny Thompson's original jacket, coat jacket from his act that he, look at, dude, look at that. And it's even got the bird poop on there on
Oh,
the
yeah, it's got
right
gum right there.
there.
Yeah, the bird poop's kind of worn a little bit,
Dude,
but
that's a
yeah.
piece of magic. I'm surprised Copperfield hasn't wanted to
He
buy that
has
from you.
one. He has one, and I
Okay.
have this one. This was the last one of Johnny's. This was,
Wow.
yeah. Copperfield wanted the one that was from earlier in his career, and
The
I picked
70s.
that one up. I did repairs and fixed it up for Copperfield's museum. So,
Nice,
yeah.
nice. So just for the people who don't know Johnny Thompson, for all the millennials out there, or the public, he was known as the Warsaw Wizard. He did a comedy magic act with his wife Pam. They are a classic duo. Johnny basically mentored everybody from Lance Burton to Penn and Teller to many other people, I'm sure.
Everybody,
He touched
everybody.
so many people's
Matt
lives.
Franco's, he did, all the tech and everything on Matt Franco's show.
Nice.
Here in town, Piff, he did the stuff on his
He just
show.
did
And
everything.
Johnny worked practically every single show in town. If there's magic here, I guarantee Johnny was in there making sure the magic was right.
I had no idea. I mean, I knew who he was, but I had no idea how many careers he had his hand in, basically, is what I'm trying to say.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It's really everybody, everybody.
Like everybody who's made it or is on the way to making it, it's Johnny
Yeah.
Thompson who's prodding them along in the right direction.
There is, I
Wow.
don't think there's a single show, a magic show that's been in this town that Johnny didn't go in. And when he was working on The Tempest with Teller,
What is
I
The
read him.
Tempest?
The Tempest is Shakespeare play, The
Okay.
Tempest.
See,
Oh,
I got a millennial excuse.
Teller directed the most amazing production. Oh, it was just unbelievable. It was probably the best show I've ever seen. I loved it. But I watched Johnny doing the tech on it, and he just had this eye that, I mean, I swear it would be things like move your pinky a quarter of an inch, and suddenly it was a miracle.
Wow.
Something that was really good was just suddenly unbelievable. And you're like, how does he see that? How did he know that that little tweak was exactly what it needed? But he did.
Because he
He
was the Yoda of the magic world.
was. He was. It was unbelievable. Yeah.
Well, there's multiple Yodas. I would consider somebody like Howie Schwartzman a
Oh,
Yoda in his
yeah. Oh,
own
yeah.
way.
He kind of looked like a Yoda. So,
I
yeah.
didn't say it, but you did. I'm just
I did.
curious.
Howie would have been okay with me saying it because
Okay.
he always said
Okay.
whatever he wanted to say to me. So,
Oh, okay. I didn't know him that well, but I did have the pleasure of meeting him once back in 2007 at the LVMI close up. What a character. Really nice guy. He was
Knowledge.
really.
Oh, he was really knowledgeable.
And he knew like
Yeah.
he was like
Billy
Johnny.
Macomb was like that. Billy Macomb knew everything. I think
And
Billy
like Billy
Macomb
McComb.
invented everything, though.
Yep.
And then you would be like, Billy thinks he invented everything. And then it would turn out he really did. You're like,
Like,
no,
well,
Billy, you didn't invent all of magic. Well, I don't know. Maybe he did, because
I
if you
kind of
like,
did, guys. I've been telling you
yeah,
for years.
well, Billy that.
Okay. What about now we're going to get to what you are known for. I was kind of, just holding off on this because I wanted you to just let this unfold as the fabric were. What maker techniques, because that's kind of the term these days. I mean, basically it's just, what people learn in shop, whether it be woodworking, electronics, fabric.
Yeah.
Maybe you might be good at that.
Yeah,
Or
I'm,
what
I
other
might be
things?
okay with fabric. Yeah.
So fabric is your thing. I've
Silk.
spoken.
A lot of, I
You've heard.
of all things to specialize in, silk. Because everybody's like, oh, I hate working with silk. I hate working with silk. And it's 90% of what I work with.
But fabric is your forte.
Yeah, fabric is my forte. And when I say silk, I'm talking more like silk, like, you know, like this, not like the thin. I mean, I do stuff with the thinner silks, but just silk. I mean, even my egg bags, they're all
silk.
This is silk.
Beautiful.
And that's why it, you know, they drape and everything like they do.
Right.
Is because, yeah, pretty much everything.
Slippery.
Everything is silk. I mean, not all the toppets. I don't, you know, I match linings, you know, for those.
Right.
But
most of what you do is silk, and you.
Yeah, I work a lot with silk.
Have you ever made things that were totally unrelated to magic? I'm sure you have, right? Have you ever needed an alteration to your outfit, or someone else required one, and you did that?
Yeah, there were, with the Atlanta Ballet, I did a thing for them.
Oh.
Now, they hired me because of magic, but what they really wanted, in my opinion, wasn't magic. They wanted a girl to fly. She flew, but they didn't, you know, she flew like on the Floyd or whatever they are, the harnesses, that they use in the Peter Pan plays and everything. Nothing's hidden.
So it was like it was clearly visible what was going on, and just kind of like.
Yeah, everything was visible.
Doing it for the effect of just.
But what they wanted was her to have a skirt that while she's up in the air, she has this huge, long skirt on with projections on it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And so, and then it was going to, it ripped off of her and then got sucked into the stage. So it was, you know, magical, I guess.
Was this the adult version of the ballet performance?
You know, it was very cool ballet. They did ballet to like Big Boy, and they did rap and did ballet.
Because when you said the skirt flies off, hopefully she was wearing something underneath.
She was, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay, she, good.
You know, dancers, you know, she
Got
had
it.
On. Again, not that kind of show.
There's that's a different Vegas show. At a different
Yeah, we're talking Atlanta here.
Atlanta, yeah, very conservative.
We're in the South at this point, so.
No, I get it, I get it. I'm here in North Carolina.
Yeah. It was a really great show. I think Janelle Monáe was in it before she was really even big. And to do all this rap and everything with ballet dancers.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it was great.
Was it a white skirt?
Yeah, it was a white. There's a fabric that's projection screen fabric.
Okay.
And so I used that projection
nice.
Screen fabric to make the screen. And then that way you can project on it.
That's really smart, actually, because I've actually never even seen that or thought of doing that. You're turning something naturally occurring into a projection screen.
Yeah, it was very neat.
Okay, and was this about when was this? Was this like 10 years ago, 5 years ago?
Let me think. I'd say maybe 15.
About 15 years ago.
Yeah,
okay.
15 years ago
so this would be fall under something that you've made in the past. Now, would you?
Yeah, just blur together. I don't. Well, like right now, I'm making stuff for David Copperfield's museum. So
that is exactly where I wanted to go with this conversation. That falls under right now and recent. So you're making something for David Copperfield's museum.
Yeah, I'm making drapes. And I'm making backings for display cabinets, and so that all the magic, because the magic was kind of just, it wasn't kind of popping really, it was just kind of blending in with the backs of some of the cases and everything.
Mm.
And so,
because it was kind of dark and the cabinets were dark wood.
And so now, you know, we've made all these really nice pieces. And then there are, you know, walls that it was like, yeah, that's just like, it's not
it's okay,
warm.
But it could be better.
Yeah, yeah. It just it wasn't warm. And then, you know, we put all these, you know, we designed all these drapes and everything in there, and it just changed the whole feel of it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's a project I'm working on right now.
No, that's great. That's great. And for those of you who weren't aware, or listening and watching, David Copperfield does have a secret. Lynetta knows where the secret museum is, of course.
Unbelievable, let me tell you. It's unbelievable. You go in there and your palms start sweating and your heart starts, because you're like, our entire history is right here.
Is it quiet? I would imagine it to be dead quiet, like a museum.
Quiet, it's peaceful, it's beautiful. I don't know if you've gone to any Magic Lives or not, but.
Yeah, I was an intern.
Okay, yeah, a few years ago, I put together a museum.
Yes.
For that, and David let me borrow even some things from his museum for that. He let me borrow Houdini's water torture cell and his milk can escape.
Wow.
Posters. He let me Richie Arty's sawing. He let me use
Dang.
That. It was, yeah, all this really, just really cool things. I think it was the Di Vernon's. Yeah, the Di Vernon's collection. Oh, it was just, yeah, it was great. But he let me use, you know, all these things. Marvin Roy's, you know, light bulb act. He let me.
Marvin Roy's light bulb act is in there. Wow.
Yeah, he let me borrow all kinds of great things. I had other things besides that, but his elevator illusion. He let me borrow that.
That's something else. That's
yeah. He let me use all these amazing things for this museum, and then he has all that, and then just and a huge library is in his museum. Huge library, and everything is being meticulously cataloged.
I've heard that. Like I said, I've never been. I've seen pictures and videos in passing. He's done some pre-recorded videos and things, but it looks like quite the thing. And I have heard. I believe it was Chris Kenner that told me he's very meticulous just with everything.
Everything.
Especially his own show. I was told he has a room or rooms of, from the old days, tapes, many, many, many thousands of tapes upon tapes, and then, of course, DVDs and et cetera,
right.
But all categorized of every show. It's all taped. And he can just go, okay, 1975, April, whatever this day, boom, got it. You know, 2018 and this show, boom, and then compare, contrast. He's very serious about his art. I mean, he can, David, clearly, with his earnings over the years, he doesn't have to or need to perform. I think his performing, to me, comes out of the passion for the art.
And I, you know what? I think this museum is that, too. I think for a while people thought he was hoarding all of this
okay.
stuff, but he wasn't. He was collecting it and putting it all together so it's safe. And he's building just this amazing gift, really. And because otherwise, all of this would just be scattered around.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't be appreciated. It, you know, it may be in somebody's home or this or that, but this is, and it's all displayed, like, I mean, in the finest museums. It's really something special. And it wasn't done, I personally don't think this was done as a selfish thing. I honestly think, I mean, he rebuilt Tannen's from when he was a kid.
Well, yeah, that was a nostalgic, he wanted to see it, he wanted to see it thrive, so that was nice.
No, he rebuilt it in his museum.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's a Tannen shop in his museum.
Okay.
Like it looked when he was a kid.
That's really cool. I didn't quite understand it that way, but that's really awesome.
Yeah.
That's
so,
really cool.
Yeah, and I don't think it was from a selfish place at all. I
well,
think
okay, I mean, to
this is
clearly,
all be a gift.
clearly he just enjoys tapping into nostalgia and just remembering the good times when he was growing up, and it's I think the main reason, to me, it seems like it's there to remind him of why he got into magic in the first place.
Yeah, the tannins part. Yeah,
the tannins part.
Yeah, and then just all that. I mean, if you think of any magic show in history, way back from, you know, even the 1800s and every, I mean, you'll see it there.
Yeah.
And like old magic kits. It really is. It's just unbelievable. It's just a beautiful thing to see.
Well, thank you for giving us a sneak peek description of those who haven't been lucky enough to physically check out David's secret museum. Wow, that is cool, and clearly you're respected in the industry if you got Copperfield calling on you to basically redecorate his museum, which is fantastic. What about are there any maker techniques that you are excited about learning this year or in any upcoming years? Things that you're working on, perhaps embellishments you want to make to your current products, and you have to learn a new type of technique to do it?
I don't know. Right now I'm learning something just for fun, and that's just working on cards, but that doesn't have to do with what I make. I just suddenly went, I love this. And so now I just sit and work with cards a lot.
You said work on cars?
Cards, playing cards, shuffling, dealing.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was like, Lynetta does under the hood stuff?
No, okay. Not cars, no.
No,
I'm not into cars. I'm the kind of person who buys a car and drives it.
Buy the car, drive the car until it doesn't drive anymore.
From here to here, that's the
right.
Does the air conditioning work?
No. I get it. So you're working on your card technique.
Yeah, but that's just for me for fun.
Right.
I'm always, I always am studying, working with fabric and all of that. I'm constantly studying that. It's the funny thing is with fabric though, the more you know, the longer it takes you to make something, not the faster, because you learn. You're supposed to take all the. You're like, that's why a professional thing looks like it does. They do all these extra steps along the way. But I'm always, I'm always trying to improve those abilities. Right now, this is something I'm playing with. Oh, these are so fun. Everybody's going to want to go out and get these. They have these new markers now, like markers fabric. They're fabric markers. Mm-hmm. And you can draw on silk with them. And it looks really cool. It doesn't bleed, and it's really
to make neat. Designs, not to just for measurements, but actually to embellish.
No, here, hold on.
Okay, she's going to. Lynetta is going.
I know.
I'm one.
Still here. You're gonna have to edit. No, that's I just wanted to see what something would look like.
No, that's okay. So Lynetta has
just
grabbed.
I wanted to try it. And so just in like 5 minutes, but it's like you can draw on fabric.
No, that's a big game changer because a lot of people get silk screen or special.
Yeah, that's like 5 minutes. Actually, 5 hours. It took me 5 hours.
I was going to say, you did that in 5 minutes? You belong in the museum
hours.
Too.
It took me forever. I worked so hard to do that.
5 minutes.
Edit that part out. I don't.
No, I'm keeping that in.
What am I paying for?
I'm keeping it in. 5 minutes, 5 hours, it's all the same. On Lynetta time, right? 5 hours is 5 minutes, right?
That's right. But no, these are really, really fun to play with. And I know magicians are going to want to play with them. They're really fun.
I want to play with them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really fun.
Yeah, because I'm always wanting to just tinker around with different designs on silks.
You can customize something for a client. You can put a client's, logo or something on it.
Dude.
Now you've totally customized the show for them.
Yes.
Yeah.
That right there, ladies and gentlemen, was worth the price of admission. I'm telling you, like these little secret gems, like I had Adam Wilbur on, where, you know, we know him from Illusionist. He's got his own company now, but he was recommending apps for your iPhone to help with creativity. That was a good one. Lynetta's dropping value here with these special markers that you've been playing with. What are they called?
Do you want me to get them?
Sure,
here,
please.
Cut to your face for a second. I'll go get them and I'll show you what they are.
Okay.
So first, I bought these. Again, the ring light gets in the way.
That's okay. Crafts for All.
Okay, so I bought those. And that's what I did that pirate with. So much fun. And so then I was like, well, those are so much fun. I'm going to buy more. And so I bought these.
Arteza.
Something like that.
Arteza. And you get them at the fabric store? Or
no, I bought the first ones I bought just on Amazon. And then the second ones I bought directly from this company, Arteza.
Okay.
Arteza.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
That is great for people who want to make multiple attempts, you know, or just prototyping, just want to go through ideas, you know.
Yeah.
Just get a bunch of one color silks. So that's your canvas, and then you can just do whatever.
Yeah.
Wow.
You're not having to pay somebody to silk screen it to try things out. Or like I said, if you want to do just a one-off for a client.
Yep. I think that's great.
You know, if you're doing corporate shows or something.
Yes.
You want to make customized, it looks like you went out and had all this special everything printed for them. And
yes.
No, I find it works best on silk.
Okay.
White silk.
And even people that are watching and listening that don't have anything to do with the magic industry, because again, this is for the public. I mean, just think of all the moms out there who are, you know, getting silk fabric. Perhaps
I'm going to back up. I said silk, but you know what? For that, it'll work on t-shirts, and it works on like
even better.
White canvas tennis shoes.
Perfect, that dude.
Shoes and stuff.
Even better. This is more music to the public's ears. So check it out, guys. You can take these markers, and
You can decorate baseball caps.
You could decorate your hats. You could decorate your kid's t-shirt. You could, you know, do something special for your daughter's sweet 16. Probably really jazz up a dress or something. Just get creative. That is so cool.
Both of those brands, they really do. They work. I thought it wasn't going to work. I thought it was going to bleed and be just a total ugly.
Usually the results are iffy with those things, but that's great that you found something. That is fantastic. Yeah. So cool. What about, we talked about some of the stuff you've designed recently. We're doing stuff in Copperfield's museum. What about if we go back to the past? I mean, we talked about the box, but is there a all-time Lynetta Welch favorite creation of the past? Gimmick, prop, thing?
Well, I mean, the Twister, if we're going to talk big props. But then, like, my product line, everything I make is, I think, an improvement on the things of the past. So I have a devil's hank, but the part that magicians love so much is that with mine, when you vanish something, there's no bulging or anything like that. It's very flat because I use the principles that I learned from making illusions with illusion bases and things like that. I used a lot of those principles from that.
That's cool.
Yeah. And then like my ghost tank, you can completely fold it up to, you know, just a little square, but yet it opens up and the ghost is full size. So everything I make,
meaning it's more compact, like a normal handkerchief should be.
Yeah, I have a ring hank that it uses the person's real ring.
Nice.
There's never any switching or anything like that. When somebody's holding on to their ring, they're really holding on to their ring.
That's great.
Yeah, Jeannie did a nice, Jeannie Magazine did just did a nice review on that. And it's actually going to be the way it works and everything. Oh, I can't believe I'm giving this up. Is going to be in the new Greater Magic book.
Oh, wow. That's a massive accomplishment, guys. So yeah. For those who don't know, and this may sound redundant to you, Lynetta, because you're a legend in the industry, but I'm talking to some of these people don't know. Greater Magic, so there's, so are they going to do a revise, they're doing a revised edition of a classic?
Richard Kaufman's, yeah, publishing
nice.
The newest edition of it.
So for those of you who are interested in magic and who want to have probably a lifetime's worth of reading and discovering and rediscovering, right? Probably Greater Magic, that's one of those books. Yeah. It's a classic reading material for magicians, and a well-known publisher in the magic industry named Richard Kaufman is doing a revised version. And Lynetta is
getting... There's an old one. This is a really old version.
Oh, that's like an encyclopedia.
Yeah, this is the one of the really old Greater Magics right here. This isn't even a first edition. Even this one, as old as it is.
And for those watching, you can see what I'm saying. It's a massive book. I mean, you can't, it's not a thing that you can sit down and read from start to finish like a novel.
Oh,
it's like,
no, huh? Yeah, I think this one is a second. I think this may be a second edition.
It's like a reference. It's almost like a big, giant encyclopedia reference manual for magicians.
Oh, yeah. This is the kind of thing that we magicians sit and lose hours. And don't realize the time has gone by.
Yes.
Because you're just like, oh, that was so clever.
Yes.
And, you know, and you're like, wow, and it's written right here. And
yes. I do that with Tarbell all the time.
I do too. I make a joke in my lecture, and and it's true, unfortunately. People will call and they'll be like, oh, can you make this? And, you know, they'll like leave a message or something. And I go through Tarbell before I call them back because it's a great resource. You know, I mean, it tells you how to make everything. You at least have a working knowledge of
the concepts.
Yeah. Rice's Encyclopedia of Silk Magic.
Rice, oh yeah, that's just out of control. You know? I mean, that's three books that are the size of that one.
There.
I've got a three on my shelf, all three.
Yeah. Yeah. So all those books, but yeah, the Greater Magic you'd get lost in it.
Yeah. Like I'll sit in a chair. It's like after dinner, I'll sit in a chair and I just go, I'm just going to browse around. Yeah. It's like, shoot, it's 11 o'clock already. Yeah. I'm browsing around for like 4 hours. It's easy.
But it gets your creative juices going.
Yes.
All those things spark all of this in your head and you're like, oh, that's the solution. Or I can take that old concept.
Yes.
And then, you know.
Yes.
I like to go through them because I lecture on the history of fabric and magic.
Great.
And so I study all these old books and then make some of the pieces. And
nice.
And them in my lecture.
You recreate.
Some things like old sweets bags and things, something people have kind of forgotten about, but it's so strong. And so,
Do I know about the sweets bag? What book is it coming from?
I'm sure it's in Tarbell. It's in Hoffman's books.
I'm familiar with Hoffman. So yeah, Hoffman's really old English style. So I don't remember seeing it, but I believe you that it's in there.
It's pretty much you take a handkerchief and you show it and then you drape it over a bowl and then the whole bowl is filled with candy.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
Wait a minute. So that's from Hoffman.
And you can show it and then you drape it over a bowl and the bowl is now filled with candy overflowing.
So you just got me inspired to go crack those books open again. I don't remember that one. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's...
expose it, but I'll be happy to show it to you.
Okay.
I have one.
Yes, after the interview is over, I would love to...
I can't produce sweets with it right now. Let's put it that way.
right. It's not sweet enough yet. You've got to sweeten the deal first. But we could talk... you could show me after the interview. I am fascinated and intrigued. What about... We talked about your recent line. We've talked about some things in the past. What about what you would consider your biggest DIY fail of all time? Something that you were making, perhaps it didn't work on stage, or something that you were doing and it was just this big catastrophe, and that makes for a great story. My guests usually come up with pretty insane stories that are great for these episodes. So I'll give you a moment to think about it.
I don't know. I mean, you're talking about a fail?
Yeah, just any fail. Any fail, you know, so you deal with fabric, something ripped in the
place. I don't let things fail.
Okay.
That's perfect all the time. Say, and it's not me saying I don't fail.
Right.
It's me saying that I'll fail. Like, I made that egg bag 20 times before I got it right. It means, I wanted to make something to produce a bottle. And I just took wires and everything and bent them and bent for days on end until I finally came up with this design that worked. And so, yeah, there were probably hundreds of failures on that. Fortunately, mm-hmm. I had a lot of extra wire.
Coat hangers. Hello.
No, it was brass. But
that was an expensive fail. Fails.
Yeah, but I had a surplus.
You lucked out.
It was something that was I used for something else, but there was leftovers from it.
I see. Okay.
And so I had a lot to play with.
Got it.
Now, I have tried to do other things with that, like, you know, I'm going to be able to produce a shot glass. I failed. but yeah, as far as something I've made that totally failed, I don't know. I would totally throw something in the trash, or I would figure out how to make it work. I wouldn't try something that.
So, yeah, okay. So maybe I need to rephrase. I understand what you're going for because you're very professional. You're saying you would never sell something or be content with something that would fail, which makes total sense.
I would never put it in front of an audience or anything.
Right. That makes total sense. So I guess let's talk about when you were making it.
That somebody said to me one time, they're like, oh my God, you never fail at anything. They're like, and I said, no, I close the door. And I cry and I scream and I throw things and then I wipe my face off and I open the door up and let the world see me again.
Hi, I'm back. I'm totally fine.
Yeah. Nothing went on behind the door.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing. And yeah, I remember making something huge. I think it was for a helicopter production or something.
Oh.
It was huge.
A cloth of some sort?
Yeah, huge. Okay. I mean, like, so big. And I did it, and I had counted wrong. And I was off by like 10 inches.
Oops.
And you talk about crying and screaming, and I had to figure out how to maneuver hems and things
so to make
that
up for
I
that
add extra to it, but it wouldn't show that extra had been added, because the whole point was we wanted no seam going across it. We wanted it clean.
Right.
It's one thing to have one seam going this way. You'd never want a seam going all the way. It's distracting.
That's insane. So 10 feet.
No, 10 inches I was off, not 10 feet. I was off.
I'm sorry.
The curtain was at least 10 feet.
That's what I meant. That you were working with a piece of fabric that was at least 10 feet long.
I think it was bigger than that. It was bigger than 10 feet.
Yeah, because I'm thinking a helicopter on stage, that might be 20
huge.
Feet.
Because it has to go across and it has to go on the sides.
So maybe 30
it's
feet.
Huge.
Maybe 30. You got 15 in front, 15 behind.
Yeah, it was. I can't even remember how big it was. It was huge. But so I was like counting
10 inches off.
10 inches for my measurements or something. And somehow it's like 10, 20, 30. You get to like this one measurement, and for some reason, my brain just would, every time.
No, I get it. I get it.
And you think measure twice. I had to have measured it, I don't know, 6 times and still messed it up. And it's one thing if you mess up on something that's, you know, 24 inches by 24 inches. Boy, it's another thing when, yeah, you're talking.
The big wraparound, that's, yeah.
Well, yeah, when you're talking like 30 feet or something and you've messed up, it's like, you can't just go, oh, well, so I'm out the cost of the fabric. You're talking a lot of fabric there.
That's what, how many yards? 10 yards? That's 10 yards, right?
Can you do math? That's what my calculator's for.
Yeah, 10 yards.
This thing was huge.
3 feet per yard, so.
And I mean, it was just your heart. My heart just went to my stomach. It just sank. And I'm like, how am I going to figure? And I did. I figured it out. Somehow I maneuvered things so hems were like.
So you like open stuff up to add?
It was, yeah. I did stuff where, like, there's a fold over hem at the top that went over. Well, I made it to where I sewed fabric together, and then that fold, the extra I added to it, folded. I did stuff like that.
You did the workaround and you made it happen.
I made it work, yeah.
Made it happen.
Until now, I don't think anybody knew.
Until now, so when this video is released, whoever bought that, they're going to go, she's the one that messed up the 10 inches off
because I was counting. That's fine. I can see now.
I could see that 10 inches were off there.
Yeah.
I don't think they're.
Yeah. What's awful about things like that, when this is what you do for a living, is you don't get to charge for your mistakes.
That's right.
The clock has to stop. And you just have to work for free. And that's painful. That's really painful when you have to do that. And that's what you know you're doing. You're like, wow.
It's humbling. And then you, by going through that, it should drive into your head to never make that mistake again.
Never made that mistake again.
Nope. Because that was a.
But yeah. That's something people don't realize is, when you make a mistake like that, the clock has to stop and you eat that time.
Right. Just eat it and move on.
Yeah.
What about, is there anything that you have created by accident, per se? Any accidental inventions, accidental discoveries that ended up maybe either being an improvement on a product or being a totally new product somebody came?
I would say my ghost tank.
Okay.
The way it works, something was said to me at one point way back, and I mistook what the person said. And because I mistook what they said, I created something new.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
So you totally misinterpreted what the description was, but in the process, it was something new and better.
I was like, I need to make that. And I made that, but that wasn't what they were saying.
But then when you told them about it and they looked at it and they went, wait a minute, this is great. How did you?
It actually was Denny Haney. It was Denny Haney.
Danny.
Then later he said, they're finally made right. I didn't tell him that I ended up with that because I misunderstood something he had said to me.
Well, this is so cool. I mean, the record's out here now. He's unfortunately not here to hear the true story, but I'm sure he's looking down on us, listening to what we're saying right now, because Denny's freaking awesome.
He probably thought, why did she make that I talked to her about? She wasn't even listening to me. I was listening, I just heard it wrong.
She just tuned the whole thing out. What was she doing?
waste my time sharing knowledge with her? She doesn't even listen to me.
No, that's you know, a lot of creative artists do that. We are listening, but not processing it in the same way that the person is saying it.
Right.
We are processing it in our own way.
I think a lot of times people think I'm not listening, when in reality I'm trying to absorb. And I know the look in my eyes is probably like, she's someplace else. She's not even listening to me. And the truth is, I'm listening intently. I'm like really listening, but I'm in my head too.
Right.
And normally building it in my head while they're talking.
Building it as they speak. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think I look like I'm looking off into the distance somewhere, but in reality, I'm listening and piecing it together while they talk.
That's good to know for anybody that meets Lynetta in person. You're ever telling her about a custom idea, if you think she's zoning you out, no, it's because she's actually making it in real time. The blueprints, the patterns, the construction, it's the gears are turning in your head.
I've told people when I'm on the phone, I go, I'm listening to you. I go, but I'm, you know, there will be some lulls here in the conversation. I'm doing more than just listening to you while we're, you know, I'm sketching things out and thinking while we're talking.
No, I get it. No, that I mean, you're very passionate about what you do, and it shows. And that's one of the ways, I guess, it shows. And that was a great story about Denny. Denny was another one, who touched so many people's lives and careers.
And generous, he would share.
Really generous guy. He was, I would say, perhaps my favorite owner of a, you know, my favorite magic shop owner, because he was one of the select few people that when you called him up or when you went into his shop, he would always tell you what you really need rather than what he wants to sell you or what the next thing was to make money. He always did that. And I always told him, I said, thank you, Denny. Being like a father, you know, he tells you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And he was like straight to the point. He's like, well, if you're looking for this, I recommend you get this old pamphlet I have back here. It's like $10.
Right.
You know, just go dig through it. It's old and dusty, but get that. That's where it is. Rather
I
than
tell people that with the egg bag, because there's like the Charlie Miller and the Mellini egg bag. Or Kim Brook and Friends and the Mellini egg bag.
Nice.
Magic Ink puts these out. They're like $10 a piece. They're cheap. But the knowledge, Johnny himself told me that this is what every great, the Charlie Miller thing, they have a little paper covering. I don't know why.
It's just one of those little, what is it, stapled together or something?
Yeah. Sometimes I sell them. I don't have any now, but Magic Ink sells them. They're like $10 a piece.
Yeah.
And yeah, Johnny told me every great egg bag routine has been based on that. $10.
So lots of times, just having this knowledge transfer over into the, quote, real world, per se, for any 9-to-5ers that are listening here. I mean, really, just the concept is about the fact that oftentimes we gloss over things that have been tried, tested, and proven in the past that may be easy to access and cheap to purchase because we're too busy focusing on the next shiny thing.
Yeah.
Or we're making the assumption that because this shiny thing is very expensive, it's always going to be better than the classic tried and true whatever it is.
Now, when it comes to an egg bag, more expensive is better.
Well, listen to Lynetta on that one, because I guess maybe I'm talking about like knowledge stuff.
There are some great new books that have recently come out. I mean, and Johnny's books are amazing, but I mean, the truth is, what's on the bookshelf behind me is more knowledge than I'll ever be able to retain, and really I mean, it's more than with what I have back there. You can put on original shows for the rest of your life.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah.
Ever and ever and ever. Yeah, so I mean, I digress or retract, but I think you know what I'm saying.
I do,
Meaning,
yeah.
the importance of focus, I guess we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Focusing on the best, and which those old books, although they happen to be old and cheap,
That's
they
right.
contain the best. And when it comes to physical products, and when it also, I would say, comes to services that you get from people, especially small businesses, I'll put it out there because I fall in that category, and so do you with your products. Usually you get what you pay for. You
Yeah.
usually get, I mean, like with your egg bags, they're gonna pay more, but it's not your average piece of junk. It's like something that, like you were telling me in a previous conversation, people can feel proud of to carry or contain in their nice,
Yeah.
really nice suit jacket at a really nice high-end whatever.
Well, you work hard on your magic. And that's, yeah, I was told when I first started that magicians wouldn't pay for what I would have to charge for my products. And I said, I think you're wrong. I said, they spend all their time working on their craft.
It's
I
true.
said, they don't want to pull out a handkerchief, that looks like they picked it up at the thrift store. I'm like, they just don't. They don't
Yeah.
want the bargain bin fabric. They want something that matches the quality of their performance.
Yes.
And I still believe that. And yeah, my stuff costs more, and I'm not Amazon. You're not going to get it tomorrow. I hand make
No, it's
everything.
handmade, bespoke,
Yeah.
high
Yeah.
quality,
And
hand-picked silk, good stuff.
I'm like, I don't pretend that, it's quick.
This is
Like,
what it is. This is how much
yeah.
it is. If they want it, they want it, and that's it. If they want the
Yeah, and
best, they got it.
when I make each piece, first of all, I hope people use them to entertain people. That's a big thing with me. When
Sure.
somebody says, "Oh, I bought that from you, but I haven't worked with it yet," I'm like, "Would you please take it out and work with it?" I'm like, "That's like hurts my feelings." I made it for people to be entertained with it. I
Right.
really did. And so I like people to, when somebody comes up and says, "I've done 500 shows with it," that makes me happy. That
Yes.
makes me happy. Or if somebody gets something and they're like, "Oh, I used it in my show," they'll send me an email or something. "I used it in my show for the first time last weekend and it killed." That makes me happy.
That's the driving force. Yeah,
Yeah,
I get
I like
that.
that because I really do every piece I make, I don't rush through anything. I don't go, "Oh, I gotta get this done." I really take my time and try to think about the person that it's going to be going to,
Nice.
and how they'll be using it in their show.
That's really awesome, and that's what sets you apart. That's what sets you apart.
Yeah,
You
I
genuinely
really do
care.
kind of think like that.
You genuinely care, and it shows in your work, which is great. What inspired you, Lynetta Welch, to be a maker?
It just is who I am, I think. I grew up like this. When I was a kid, my parents went to a garage sale, and I hadn't gone with them. I was at home, and they called me while they were out, and they said, "Lynetta, we found this Singer sewing machine," and they said, "They said, we'll buy it, and if you pay us back for it, with babysitting money or what, birthday money, whatever," they're like, "if you'll pay us back for it, we'll pay for sewing lessons."
Nice.
It was $75. And I said, "I want it. I want it." And I was a kid at the time. I couldn't have been, I don't know, maybe 12, 13, something like that. I don't know. Yeah, it had to have been birthday money. I don't think I was babysitting that young. But yeah, I paid them back, and yeah, they paid for sewing lessons. And that got me started with the sewing and everything. But then my parents were always creative. My mom would paint, and even now she makes like greeting cards and everything. That she sends out to everybody. And, you know, my dad was always making things, whether it was with wood or, you know, just,
cool.
I don't know, painting and things. It was just always a part of my life.
You grew up in that environment.
Yeah, and it was encouraged. I would be given art supplies for Christmas, and you know, it was something I loved, and it was encouraged. And so it's just always been what I am. And magic, and it just came together because magic was just this fun thing that I picked up when I was a kid. And then it just ended up coming, the two passions ended up coming together.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I always think I'm going to make myself clothes and things like that. I'm like, you can make your own, and then I don't have time.
Right.
And people are like, oh, I bet you make all your clothes. And I'm like, I wish.
Nope.
I usually say, I wish I could afford me. like, you know, I can't afford me. Now it is fun. Like Joan DeCore and I, before, you know, COVID and everything, we were working on a show and everything. And I would say, we can do, if you have an idea, we can do it, because I can make anything. So we don't have to worry about, oh, we'll need this prop or that prop, because I can make anything. And so it opened us up to, you know, be able to create whatever we wanted to create, because I'm like, you know, and then her fiance can literally make anything too. It's fun to be able to think like that. Well, that's okay. I can make anything. I always just think that way. That's okay. I can make it.
That's a really good mindset to have.
Yeah, I don't ever even question it. I can make that.
Love it.
I don't ever doubt that. I don't ever think I'm lying or anything, because I really don't doubt. And like, yeah. Oh yeah. Sure.
Confident and passionate and just let's do it. Sure.
Yeah, because you can figure it out. You know how it is. You can just figure it out.
Some people get too afraid and they cop out easy.
Yeah.
A lot of people actually.
And I think the more that you study and read the old books and everything,
right.
That's like our paintbrushes. It's just more in our toolbox.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, the more knowledge that we have, the more we go, oh yeah, well, that could be done, that's similar to,
yes,
yeah, I think a similar method to that
cross reference, yeah,
like, you know. And so that's another part of even just flipping through the books, even if you're not looking for something in particular, you just absorb,
yes, and just save for later in the back of your mind.
And it comes back. If somebody says, oh, what was your favorite thing in so and so book, you'll be like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't remember anything. I don't even remember reading the book. But then when you need that knowledge, when you're sitting working on something, it just pops up.
Yeah.
It's just there. That's my experience.
The subconscious mind is a magical thing.
Yeah. I think most creative people, I've done drawing and stuff, and you know, it's similar there. You don't think you can draw, and then you draw something, and where did that come from?
Yep.
And when you're creating magic and stuff, people will be like, "How do you even? Do you have patterns for that?" Oh, no, I just like a quick change something. I'm like, no, you can't have patterns for that. Everything is different, and it just happens. It comes out of you. There's something that, I don't know, maybe some of us just open some door that other people don't open. I don't know, but it just happens.
Channeling your creative spirit fairy.
Sometimes you feel guilty taking credit for something because you don't really know where it came from.
Well,
like, I don't know how I came up with that.
People call it divine inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it's your little angels whispering in your ears or something that you know, I don't
knows?
know. I don't know where it comes from, but it just happens.
So we've talked about you've had this really you've been so lucky to grow up in an environment that fostered creativity and literally gave you the example for what it's like to just set out and make stuff, go out and make stuff. You know, you said your dad, your mother, they're makers in their own way. And then you've got this sewing machine and the rest is history. It's just so cool. Is there any people or makers, creators in the maker space that you look up to in the industry? And this could be in the magic industry, or it could even be just in the regular industry. And I'll use this example for every interview. For instance, some people go, oh, I look up these channels on YouTube and I get ideas from so-and-so or stuff like that. So think about that.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I look up to people like a Johnny Gaughan and those, you know, and Bill Smith and, you know, even Dave Mendoza and those people, you know, Kevin James.
Oh, yeah.
Kevin James, to me, his creativity just blows my mind. When I, you know, when you talk about where does that even come from? You know, I want to know where it comes from with him, because he's so creative. I'm like, you know, I'm in awe of his creativity. People like that.
We're talking about Kevin James, the magician. There's another Kevin James who was on the King of Queens. We're talking about the magician.
Yeah, Kevin James, the magician.
I'll put a picture of him up so you can see.
Yeah, he's like, he's so incredibly creative that I just, you know, I just love that. And then, you know, the illusion builders, I'm really fascinated with, with those, you go, wow. How did they figure all that out?
They're like architects, like Franz Ferrari stuff, architecture.
Yeah. How does Franz come up with these, you know, where does that come from? I met Franz so long ago, and he just, back when he first moved to Los Angeles, oh geez, had to be 30 years ago or so. And even back then, just drawings and drawings and all these ideas and, you know, just all these things. He was always working on creating all these new things. And just to see those, you know, the gears going in these people's brains. And
he's a prime example.
I remember one time just hanging out at Kevin James' warehouse, his workspace and everything, and all the people that were around, and it was just the greatest feeling, all that creative energy going and the laughter and the, you know, the just the fun times, and but it was such a happy creative atmosphere to be in. And I'm trying to think. I mean, there are so many.
Well, I mean, the names that you've mentioned so far are pretty heavy hitters. John Gaughan, Kevin James, Bill Smith.
They're so creative. It's just great. And it's great to be around them, because you just, you know,
you absorb, you get inspired.
Yeah, you really do. And then, I mean, there are, you know, young people coming up even that I think, wow, okay, the future's in good hands there. There's some really, you know, really creative and talented young people coming up that,
oh yeah,
you know, you hear all these bad things. Oh, you know, the youth, they're, you know, all they learn is from videos. And you're like, you might want to take a look at these young people.
Well, there's nothing wrong with learning from videos. I think that's
nothing wrong at all. You learn from where you learn.
Yeah, learning is learning. And
exactly.
And
I learned a lot from videos. Oh, YouTube's my favorite channel. I'm sorry. I learn everything. You know, I mean, I I learned magic. I learned cooking. I learned sewing. I learned, I mean, there's so much information.
I believe I'm on it all the time. Anytime I have qu I'm stuck with something, I was like, maybe there's a YouTube video on that.
And there
That's
is.
there
I came
usually
from a
is.
car, and this time I really am saying a car.
A real car this time.
By watching a YouTube video, it was like, I think I could do that. Or sometimes it's silly things like changing the rear windshield wiper blade. It's a simple thing, but you have to know the trick.
It's just like magic. Yes, you feel so intimidated by it until you see somebody else do it in a video, and you go, oh, that's it. Done.
And
Done.
then you're like, thank you, thank you, thank you so much, because I would have never gotten that windshield wiper blade off if you hadn't told me I needed to flip this.
Just flip the switch. Yeah, it saved me hours on many occasions just because if I were to just try to come up with it on my own, I would have wasted a lot of time.
But yeah, I there are some, there are some really good young people coming up. I like watching them. And
Okay.
I actually like being around them because I like the energy that they have, the excitement.
Yes.
I
The
like that.
buzz, yes.
Yeah. You
Yes.
lose that a lot of times as the years go by, and then you
Yes.
see
Well,
it from
that's
young
just.
people, and you're like, oh, that's right. You want to get that excitement back. Yeah, you
That's
want to
why
get
we got
that.
into this.
Yeah. You want to get that excitement back about, creating your magic and everything. Hang out with some young people. They got it. They've got
Some
that
young
excitement.
whippersnappers.
Yeah. They've got the excitement, and it'll rub off on you.
It does. Yeah. I love it. I love hanging around people that inspire me. And it doesn't, for me, inspiration can come at any age.
Well, I read something recently that it was important to have a young mentor. Like, it's one thing to have an older mentor that can teach you the knowledge they have, but it's really important to have a young mentor, because, well, first of all, that excitement, but they can also teach you a lot about what today's audiences want. And it can
Yes.
be something that you might not see because you're still thinking another way.
You're thinking it from another time.
And it's different. And so
I
that's
like
quite
that a
fun.
lot. I like that a lot for me. What it is about people who are younger than, I mean, I'm still young, but young, I'm not 12
You're not
like
a
I was
pop.
when I started. But I am fascinated by seeing 12-year-olds, teenagers that are just crushing it in their career, and it really does energize me. And I look at them and I go, wow, they're a lot younger than me. They're doing 10 times more than I was at that age. So what can I learn from them? What's their secret sauce? So yeah. Speaking of bringing this interview full circle, where can all of our viewers and listeners find out more about Lynetta Welch, her fabric manipulation, and the great products that she creates?
Right now, they can go to fabricmanipulation.com.
See how I did that there?
But to make it easier, you can go to lynetta.com.
Just
And that
Lynetta,
will
your first
be,
name?
Lynetta. Right now, that goes to fabric manipulation, but soon it's going to be a new website. But
Nice
it's a lot more
domain
about
forward.
the fabric manipulation is really the product line.
Okay.
And the new one will be, the product line will be there, but it'll also be about the consulting and the lecturing and all of that.
I see, because you do consulting for magicians and performers. You do lecture on the history of the mystery and probably know a heck of a lot about the history of fabric and how it relates to magic. I would.
That's what I know the most about.
Pockets, pochettes.
All of it.
Yes.
All of the way more than what you would even think.
Yeah.
It's in illusions. It's a big part of illusions. Spandex and
That's
the
right. That's right. Whipping cloths off boxes. There's
yeah, and
special
it'll have to be a
cloth.
certain kind of fabric. It needs to flow, but it doesn't. We don't want it to rip, and
A lot of subtle details there.
there's a lot of stuff you don't think about. Like I said, the seams and everything. Where do you find fabric that comes that big? And there's yeah, it's in everything. It's used in close up. It's Here we touched on toppets a little bit, but there's even, you know, there's even more.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's a part of close-up, it's part of parlor, it's part of stage, it's, you know, it's part of illusions, it's part of, you know, you don't realize how much, you know, there's black art, there's, you know, there's so much. And even if you're not doing a black art act per se, it's still used a lot.
Yeah, you can use just camouflage concepts.
Yeah.
With fabric.
With fabric. There's, yeah. And,
usually.
It, you know, like I'd start lecturing, my lecture starts in like the 1500s, and you'd be surprised how long certain things have been around. Like the egg bag, the first one I found really dated back to the 1500s, and it was a stocking cap. And I'd never heard of that before, but yeah, it was a knit stocking cap that was used. And they talk about smashing the egg in it, but then they pull out the egg, and yeah.
Wow.
It goes way, way back.
That wow, wow, wow.
Way back.
All on Lynetta.com, folks. I'll put a link, dropping the link right here below. You can see it if you're watching this video. Lynetta.com, fabricmanipulation.com. That's her product line if you're interested in checking out some really classy, high-end, durable props and utility items made from fabric designed to last and last and last. That's where you go to get it. Lynetta, this has been one heck of a interview. This has been inspiring, educational. You've got some great true stories from your life that's just out of this world. It's just really surprised me today. And I really thank you for taking the time to be on Making Magic. And
thank you. This is real. It's really been fun. Thanks.
Absolutely. And so for all you listeners out there and all you viewers, this has been another episode of Making Magic. If you've enjoyed the interview, if you've gotten some out of it, if you've gotten inspired, amused, entertained, made you laugh, feel free to click the subscribe button below. Press the like, give it a thumbs up so you'll be notified when the next video or podcast episode comes out. We're on Apple Podcasts now, Spotify, Google Podcasts. We're spread out, spreading wide, and want to spread this message. And I want to inspire creativity and innovation. The world needs more of that. So Lynetta, thank you so much for being on Making Magic. And we'll see you guys on the next episode.